This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome to Issues 2018. I'm Steve McIntosh. Our guest this week is Lon Smith, Chief Development Officer, Museum of World Treasures. Of course, that's located here in Wichita. Welcome, Lon, to Issues 2018.
Well, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
How long have you been at the museum?
I started back there in October of 2016.
2016?
Yes.
And we first became acquainted when you were at the Kansas Aviation Museum.
Right.
Tell us about your time there.
Well, I was there just a little shy of 8 years. And, you know, we worked very hard. We got a lot done while I was there, the mechanical upgrade to the building and so forth, really improved the facilities and moved the museum forward. When I left there, you know, it was just time. It was my time to go. I think I'd accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, the goals I'd set for myself, and just needed a change.
What had you done before that?
Well, I was actually at the Museum of World Treasures for 3 years.
Is that how
years.
You got here in Wichita?
It is. Well,
You're actually from Missouri, aren't you?
I'm from St. Louis area.
Yeah.
I'm actually from Illinois on the east side.
Okay.
But yeah, St. Louis area. I got here actually because my wife is a Kansan. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
And she wanted to be back closer to family. So here we came, and I got the job at the Museum of World Treasures and then on over to the Kansas Aviation Museum. And then, you know, I always loved the Museum of World Treasures, and I missed it. So I went back.
How does one train or educate themselves to be a museum person?
Well, you know, there's a number of yeah.
I know you've dabbled a lot in showbiz, done some stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did you get in the museum business?
Well, you know, for me, it all started when I was a baby. Back in Madison County, Illinois, the most litigious county in the country, as a matter of fact. In the county seat, my mother was the curator at the County Historic Museum. And I was a little toddler, and she was putting in an exhibit one day with some volunteers. And there's a guy that grew up in that area by the name of Robert Wadlow, the tallest man who ever lived.
Yeah.
Yep.
World's tallest man.
World's tallest man.
Yeah.
He factored into my radio show, if you remember.
Yeah.
And they had his boot there. It was, well, people can't see my hands, but it was a
like
very, very large boot.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find me. And lo and behold, I had crawled into that boot and fallen asleep. And that's my beginning in museums.
In the boot of the world's biggest man.
Yes. And so I've been around.
St. Louis is, I'm reading Ron Chernow's Ulysses S. Grant biography.
Yes. Grant's Farm.
There's a big book.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually lived around that area for quite a while.
He did. He had the big family farm there following the Civil War. And yeah, he factors into history there in a pretty big way.
His wife's family is from there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Museum of World Treasures, as opposed to the Kansas Aviation Museum,
right.
You have a good location.
We do.
You know, the Aviation Museum, doggone it, is just kind of a tough spot.
It's rough.
But
it is rough.
It's a neat place because of its history.
The history is amazing, but it's not the kind of place you just happen by.
Yeah.
You know, whereas at the Museum of World Treasures, people happen by there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Down there in Old Town?
In Old Town, right. Right across from River City Brewery.
How many guests are you entertaining now?
Well, this year, or I should say in 2017, we got right up around 45,000, which represents about a 4 to 5% increase over the previous year. And we experience that about every year, about a 4 to 5% increase. This year, we're hoping for a more dramatic increase due to a number of things we can talk about as we move along.
Okay, yeah. What do visitors generally say about the museum after they've gone through it?
People love the diversity of the collection. You know, they love to come there, and we remain for the past 8 or 9 years the number one pick on TripAdvisor among museums in Wichita. And I think it's because, it's true, it's a fact, number four among all attractions.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's true because when people come there, there's a little bit of something for everyone. You know, it's just such a diverse collection. Some people have called it the mini Smithsonian of the Midwest. I don't want to overstate who we are, what we do, but it does have that feel, a sort of a very eclectic, mixed collection of artifacts that does appeal to a wide audience.
Now, give us a little history of the Museum of World Treasures.
Okay.
So it was Where did it start?
Right. Yeah. It was founded in 2001. It's kind of a funny story, and I'll give the Reader's Digest version, but John and Lorna Kardatsky, John Kardatsky is a local physician, and his wife, Lorna, they had all these artifacts, a couple of thousand artifacts in their basement. And there was a big flood behind their house one night, and they had luckily got everything upstairs just in time. And Lorna said, "That's it. We're starting a museum. We're getting this stuff out of here." And so they founded the museum, started over at the Garvey Center, and then in 2003 or 4 moved to the current facility.
And because I know John and Lorna, I know that Lorna is in charge.
Yeah. Well,
she doesn't say much, but yeah. You know she's in charge.
Yeah, and you know John was diagnosed with Alzheimer's about 5 years ago, and you know sadly has progressed, and he doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. The museum, which is sad because, you know, it really was his brainchild. And so we started with a couple of thousand artifacts. We're now up to about 12 or 14,000 artifacts, and we own about 75% of the collection.
Mm. And again, I spent a lot of time with John and Lorna.
Yes. Yeah.
Good people.
Good people.
Good people.
Yes, indeed.
Now, how would you describe then your collection there?
Well, again, it really is very eclectic. So, if for those who haven't been there before, you know, you're going to see world-class paleontological specimens. We have a T-Rex specimen that's ranked in the top 10 in the world in terms of the volume of bones or the number of bones or the fossils, I should say, and the quality of the presentation. And then we've got ancient civilization artifacts from all over the globe, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Etruscan, Mesopotamian. We have a rock and mineral collection, gem and mineral collection that's really attractive. Fossils from Kansas. You know, most people don't know Kansas was underwater during those eras. So when you find things here in Kansas that are from the same era as T-Rexes, they're usually fishes or some kind of reptile.
Now, how do you organize all that? Just sections, then you go from one to the next.
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough.
Are you just on one floor? I don't think I've been in there.
We're three floors.
Three floors.
Three
okay.
floors. Yeah. So we have
so
all.
How long do you think it takes to go through there for an average person?
Well, you know, it really depends on how you want to look at a museum. Okay. And for people who like to just kind of breeze through and look at the stuff, you know, they might be able to get through in an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, I'd go through on roller skates, but. And that you found something that you're really interested in, right?
Yeah.
Then you stop.
For people who want to read a lot, you know, it's going to take 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
We know from museum studies that only about 20% of the people who come to museums like to read anything. So the average person just wants to kind of breeze through and go, wow, cool dinosaur, really neat mummies. We do have 5 Egyptian mummies, 3 non-human and 2 human. And then when you move up to the second floor, we have mainly 3 kinds of exhibits, militaria from the revolution through the Vietnam era, signatures of every president on original documents, and then signatures of many royal figures along with artifacts from, you know, the medieval period, the Renaissance period, and so forth, and later. You know, we have signatures of, you know, Marie Antoinette and
so
Henry VIII.
Lon, how did John find all this stuff? Did he network with people?
Well, again, at this point, a pretty small proportion of the artifacts that are there actually were part of the Kardatsky collection.
It's grown over there.
It's grown so much, you know. Yeah. But we work with about 140 different collectors. Quite often, they will loan artifacts initially and then later make the decision to donate those artifacts to the museum. Some are on permanent loan, like the section of Berlin Wall that we have. We'll likely never own that. But the people who do own it don't really have a place for it, so it's going to stay there for a long time.
They're communists, right?
Well, yeah, right, yeah. Well, it's actually owned by the American Overseas School library here. So
I want to talk for just a little bit, focus a little bit on the exhibits of nature, including the fossils.
Mm.
Tell me about the dinosaurs' bones and things like that.
Well, you're getting into an area that I don't have a whole lot of expertise. I mean, I can tell you a few things about it, like the T-Rex, for instance.
Everybody knows what that is.
Everybody knows
That's
what the T-Rex is.
It's a great big ugly guy.
It's a great big ugly
guy.
You
got one of those.
It's like 38 feet from nose to tail.
Really?
Yeah. I actually helped assemble it when it came in 2007, which was very much very exciting, a lot of fun. But it was found in what's known as the Hell Creek Formation, which is in kind of southwestern South Dakota.
Oh yeah.
And
it's named
Ivan because it was found on a ranch owned by a gentleman named Ivan. And he's been here several times to see the dinosaurs. So, yeah.
When you were putting that together, did you feel a little bit like you were Fred Flintstone and you wanted to scurry away?
Flintstone.
But you have other dinosaurs as well, right?
We do. We have a Diplodocus, which is a plant eater, and an Edmontosaurus, which is a plant eater, and then a Diplodocus, which is an older relative of the T-Rex, and they look very similar, but the Diplodocus is much smaller than the T-Rex.
Yeah, I don't know much about dinosaurs, except I know the Brontosaurus is that one. It's about
it's a block
and a half long. You don't
right.
have one of those.
No, we don't have
room
those.
In there.
We like have that. A Triceratops skull. We have a Pteranodon, which is a type of flying,
Yeah, yeah.
And now you've tapped about every bit of information I have about dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah, that's not my area. My area of personal expertise.
You don't have Barney and Barney Rubble and.
Well, we don't. Yeah, Fred and Barney aren't down there.
Sorry. What were you saying?
That's okay. My area of historic expertise is the founding era from political and social history from about 1760 to 1820.
And we'll get into that in just a minute. But first, I want to say that you're listening to Issues 2018 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Lon Smith, Chief Development Officer, Museum of World Treasures here in Wichita. Privately owned museum? Do you receive any funding beyond ticket sales, anything like that?
It is not privately owned.
Okay.
It is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation registered with the state of Kansas. We donations to the museum are tax deductible. We'll put that little plug in if anybody wants to do that.
Sure.
We are funded, though privately funded, by and large. So about 70% of our annual income comes from earned income, like ticket sales and rental events and that sort of thing, tours. And then the balance comes from mostly from contributions, but some grants. We were part of the cultural arts funding program through the city of Wichita, and we get a small grant from the city. Our rent is forgiven by the city, so that represents about it's about $60,000 a year.
Do you entertain large groups?
We do.
Students? Do you have any students?
You're talking about like rental groups, or do we?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, people want to take a tour and they come in great big buses.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. We have about on average about 7,000 or 8,000 students a year, mostly grade school students, but some high school and junior high. Listen to me, junior high. That's
middle school.
Middle school, yeah.
So when you come in on a student basis like that, do they want to focus, say, science class and they're going to see the fossils and maybe history, they're going somewhere else?
It really depends. I mean, we have sort of some schools come in and it's just, okay, this is a reward for doing well in class.
So just have fun.
We just do a general tour kind of thing.
Yeah.
Some teachers want to focus that in certain areas, and we can certainly do that. We also usually include a hands-on activity with every tour. So they'll do something, sit down and do some activity.
I bet you you've entertained people from all over the world, haven't you?
Really, it's easier. We do. We have. There's a map up in our lobby that shows, and people put pins, when they're from whatever, Afghanistan or whatever it might be. It's easier to count the countries that aren't represented than it is the ones that are.
Really getting crowded then.
Yeah,
up
it
on
is.
The map.
Yep.
Now, you show war artifacts. Tell us about, for a minute, about Civil War exhibits. I'm into Civil War.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I talked about U.S. Grant a minute ago, so,
Yeah. Civil War, we have really an interesting collection, and we have a couple of collectors who feed that collection really every year, and some really interesting stuff. A lot of weaponry, as you might expect, but clothing from the era, uniforms, different things. Kind of a funny story, we have a diorama there, so there's a kind of a plexiglass wall, and there's a tent, and there's a table there with a mannequin sitting at it dressed in Civil War. Right. And that was put in the very beginning back in 2003. And recently we had to take it down to put new carpeting in. So we took it down, and it was an opportunity to really examine those artifacts. So the guy was sitting at a table supposedly eating a meal, had utensils there. And there was a number of things sitting on the table. One of those, as it turns out, we found was used for proctological exams. So,
wasn't exactly recently or during.
Well, you know, back in the Civil War era, but probably not the thing you'd have at your table when you're eating. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about World War One? What have you got from World War One?
Well, we have a representation of a World War One trench, and when people walk through, they get a sense of, you know, they'd put boards in the bottom of the trench. They were called duck boards, and the reason they did that is because then you know, imagine you're sitting there. And around the corner in a trench on the other side, you suddenly hear these duckboards squeaking. Mm-hmm. Now, it may be a friend, but then again, it may be a foe. So it was a warning signal. So we have a really neat representation of a World War One trench, and that's the main attraction there in that exhibit.
How about World War II?
World War II is extensive. One of the things I like the most about that exhibit is the propaganda that was used in World War II, some of the... You know, the advertisements that were produced by the Nazi regime, but even here at home.
We were good at it, too.
We were. We had to convince people to be involved in that war.
How about interesting documents? Tell me about documents you've got.
Well, one of the most interesting, you may have heard this story last summer, and I'll tell this quickly, but National Public Radio, every year, they put together a collection of famous people, and they record the Declaration of Independence and then play it back on the 4th of July.
Right, right.
Well, this past year, they decided, in addition to playing it back, they would also tweet the Declaration of Independence with the popularity of Twitter. And so they started in, and at 140 characters a pop, you can imagine it took quite a few. Well, about halfway through that, some people so ignorant of what the Declaration actually says, instead of it, you know, calling for the overthrow of the English government, thought they were calling for our own government to be overthrown and for Donald Trump to be thrown out of office, and began tweeting things like, we're going to come down there with guns and blow you up and all these things. The reason I mention that is we have an original copy of the Declaration of Independence. In 1844, they made 200 copies from the original. They took that and moistened it, made an impression on a copper plate.
You could do that then.
Etched it, and then made 200 copies. And we have one of those. And I want to say there's only 33 of those known to exist, and we have one there at the Museum of World Treasures.
Wow.
Great opportunity to be able to teach young people and some adults who are— Many adults, you know, what the Declaration is really all about.
Tell me about your sculptures.
Well, we have a number of sculptures from the Roman era, primarily. We have a full-sized Roman sculpture, along with many other pieces that really be classified as art, even though they may have been functional. All the Greek pottery. We have a number of paintings. We have etchings, all kinds of things. We actually have a bas-relief that we commissioned from Bruno Lucchese. Who's a famous sculptor. You know, he has, as an example, he's done big doors on cathedrals in Europe.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing. Like, this is a pretty famous guy.
You were talking, I interrupted you earlier. Your expertise is in what area again?
Social political history from about 1760 to 1820 or so. Yeah.
So the highlights there would be the war stuff. But
well, you know, one of the things I always like to point out is, and with the popularity of the musical Hamilton, you know, most people weren't too familiar with Hamilton as a founder before that musical. And now, you know, virtually everyone is.
Yeah, there was a big Hamilton mania going on.
Yeah, right. Well, we have a coat that was owned and worn by commission to be made by Alexander Hamilton. We have the provenance on that going all the way back to his family.
Did he own it?
He owned it and he wore it.
And basically, I would say it's not a very big garment because
no.
I think he was about 5'7".
He was about 140.
Not a big man.
Yeah,
not
it wasn't a big guy. People in general were a little smaller back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have that jacket there. So again, another rich opportunity to then, you know, spin off and talk about the life of Hamilton, the founders, and some of the things they
did. What's interesting, Lon, when I visited the battlefield of the Custer Museum and Battlefield.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you been up to that?
I have.
The garments that Custer wore were really interesting to me.
It's true. And speaking of garments that Custer wore,
yeah.
We have, and we do have the provenance on this, we have a pair of long johns worn by Custer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, kind of a weird thing. We have
Custer's
underwear.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about rental events. What are rental events exactly?
Well, we have a facility there that seats, very comfortably about 150, but up to maybe 180, 190. And people rent that facility for various reasons, maybe a wedding reception or corporate event or retreat, what have you. And, you know, it's a very unique opportunity. You know, there's a lot of spaces you can go in town and you can rent a space.
Yeah.
And they're very, very nice. At the Museum of World Treasures, you can rent a space, but while you're there, your guests can also look at the museum. In addition to that, we have this amazing children's activity center. And so, like, if you're having a wedding reception, there's a lot of kids there. Gives the kids something to do besides say, hey, Mom, I'm bored.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, really nice place to have an event.
So you do that. Do you do any fundraisers during the year?
We do.
Special fundraisers?
We do. We have an annual gala fundraiser. This year it's in July. Don't ask me the exact date. I can't remember, but people can go to our website and get that information.
Sure.
But anyway, this year it's Rome Meets Hollywood, a toga party.
Okay.
So we'll have all kinds of information around the museum about treatments that Hollywood has made of Rome, everything from Ben-Hur to Animal House.
Oh, yeah.
And everything in between. So how Hollywood, and we have some artifacts that are representative of that era, the Hollywood era, the golden era of Hollywood,
okay.
I guess. So
you've got Custer's underwear.
Custer's underwear.
Just, you know, if I ever become really famous,
yeah,
I would be more than happy to donate some of my Utrel.
Oh, we would love that. We would love that. Yeah. Here is
here they are.
Steve McIntosh's boxer briefs.
All right, that's enough of that. Now, tell me, anything new and exciting that's going on down there?
Yes.
Got some big plans? Tell me.
We just opened on December 15th it's called Ivan's Playhouse. It's a children's activity center. This thing is really amazing, and it's very personal to me because my wife, who is a commercial interior designer, and I designed the thing, and we built it. So we each spent a couple, 300 hours down there, weekends and evenings, over 5 or 6 weeks, building out this whole thing. It has a little theater with 4 different backdrops and all the costumes that go with it and little scripts that the families can portray. That includes medieval era, Rome, the Old West, and Egypt. Then it has a treehouse. The kids can go in and out. There's secret passages and all kinds of stuff. There's a puppet theater as well. There's a Lego wall, a chalkboard wall, a whiteboard wall. There's activities of all kinds there. It's really a fun place. We encourage homeschool families to come there. We have free Wi-Fi, and they can use it like a classroom. They can bring their laptops, their iPads, whatever, do some work on their schoolwork, take a break, have a, you know, go see exhibits, so on and so forth.
Now, pull out your soapbox and get up on it and tell me, how important is history? Most people just don't, you know anything about it. But you and I, we're into it way up to here.
I know. Well, we're in the era of you know, STEM, science, technology, engineering,
yeah,
and math.
Yeah.
And please don't anyone misconstrue me, saying that that's not important. All
it
those
is.
Things are important. But included in that should be art and history. And I think we've kind of set those aside a little bit, which is sad. I mean, history is so important because we can learn from that. And as people are oft to say, we can possibly avoid mistakes in the future that have already been made in the past.
That's the importance of history.
It is. It's incredibly important.
So if you could do anything else in the world, I know you would like to be a stage actor, but is there anything else you'd rather be than being the being down there at the Museum of World Treasures right now?
Independently wealthy.
Oh, well, I think many of us have that desire.
Yeah, right.
All right, so you're going to stay a while and have a good time down there?
Oh, yeah.
Entertaining folks?
Oh, it's fun stuff, yeah.
Right. Well, listen, we want to thank you, Lon, for being with us here on the Issues Show, and it's always good to talk to you because if you know a lot, and it's always fun to talk to somebody who is into history. So thank you again for spending some time with us here on the Issues Show, Lon.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much for having
me. It's always good to see you here on the Intercom stations. Our guest, Lon Smith, Chief Development Officer, Museum of World Treasures, and it's right there in Old Town in Wichita. Mm-hmm. That's all for this edition of Issues 2018. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.